लाभ गिरिवर धारी जयो राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे जयो राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे जयो कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जयो कृष्ण बलराम जयो गौरानी ताई जयो गौरानी ताई जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्री चैतन्य चरितामृता Chapter Madhya Leela, Chapter 23rd, Verse 7. So I'm going to read verse from 7 to 12, and then for verse 13, we'll do the call and response, and the purport, and then we'll structure the class, talking about the specificity of Anartha Nivritti, and what does it mean to have my own Anartha profile? If I can create my own Anartha profile, that would be the main concept of the class. So I'll start with the verse. We don't need to do back and forth for this. We're only doing it for verse number 13. Samayan mashnita swanto mamatvati shayana ankita bhavasa eva sandratma buddhai prema nigadyate. Translation. when that bhava softens the heart completely, becomes endowed with a great feeling of possessiveness in relation to the Lord, and becomes very much condensed and intensified, it is called prema, love of Godhead, by learned scholars.
Ananya mamata Vishnu, mamata prema sangata, bhaktiriti uchyate bhishma, prahladodhava naradaye.
When one develops an unflinching sense of ownership or possessiveness in relation to Lord Vishnu, or in other words, when one thinks Vishnu and no one else to be the only object of love, such an awakening is called bhakti, devotion by exalted persons like Bhishma, Prahlad, Uddhava and Narada.
Kona bhagye kona jivera shraddhaya dihaya tabe sei jiva sadhu sangaye karaya.
If, by good fortune, a living entity develops faith in Krishna, he begins to associate with devotees.
Sadhu sangha haite haya shravana kirtana sadhana bhaktye haya sarvanaltha nivartana.
When one is encouraged in devotional service by the association of devotees, one becomes free from all unwanted contamination by following the regulative principles and chanting and hearing.
Anartha nivritti haile bhaktye nishtha haya nishtha haite shravanadye ruchi upajaya.
When one is freed from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. When firm faith in devotional service awakens, a taste for hearing and chanting also awakens.
Ruchi haite bhaktye haya asakti prachura asakti haite chitte janme krishne priti ankura.
After taste is awakened, a deep attachment arises, and from that attachment the seed of love for Krishna grows in the heart.
Shei bhave gadha haile dhare prema nama.
Please repeat after.
Shei prema prayojana sarvananda dhama.
Once again,
Shei bhave gada haile dhare prema nama. Shei prema prayojana sarvananda dhama.
Once again,
Shei bhave gada haile dhare prema nama. Shei prema prayojana sarvananda dhama.
Would anyone like to repeat the verse?
Shei bhave gada haile dhare prema nama. Sei prema prayojana sarvanandam. Sei bhava gada haile dhare prema nama. Sei prema prayojana sarvananda dhamma.
Someone from ladies.
Sei bhava gada haile dhare prema nama. Sei prema prayojana sarvananda dhamma. Sei bhave gada haile dhare prema nama. Sei prema prayojana sarvananda dhamma.
Very good. Sei bhava. That emotional condition.
Gada.
Sorry. Gada haile. When it becomes intensified.
Dhare
takes
prema nama the name love of Godhead.
Shei prema,
that love of Godhead.
Prayojana,
the ultimate goal of life.
Sarva ananda dhamma,
the reservoir of all pleasure. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. When that ecstatic emotional stage intensifies, it is called love of Godhead. Such love is life's ultimate goal and the reservoir of all pleasure. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes this growth of love of Godhead as a gradual process. A person becomes interested in devotional service by some good fortune. Eventually, he becomes interested in pure devotional service without material contamination. At that point, a person wants to associate with devotees. As a result of this association, he becomes more and more interested in discharging devotional service and hearing and chanting. The more one is interested in hearing and chanting, the more he is purified of material contamination. Liberation from material contamination is called anartha nivritti, indicating a diminishing of all unwanted things. This is the test of development in devotional service. If one actually develops the devotional attitude, he must be freed from the material contamination of illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. These are the preliminary symptoms. When one is freed from all material contamination, his firm faith in devotional service awakens. When firm faith develops, a taste arises. And by that taste, one becomes attached to devotional service. When this attachment intensifies, the seed of love of Krishna fructifies. This position is called priti or rati, affection or bhav, emotion. When rati intensifies, it is called love of Godhead. This love of Godhead is actually life's highest perfection and the reservoir of all pleasure. Thus, devotional life is divided into two stages, sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti. Sadhana bhakti refers to the development of devotional service through the regulative principles. The basic principle for the execution of devotional service is faith. Above that, there is association with devotees, and after that, there is initiation by a bona fide spiritual master. After initiation, when one follows the regulative principles of devotional service, one becomes freed from all unwanted things. In this way, one becomes firmly fixed and gradually develops a taste for devotional service. The more the taste grows, the more one desires to render service to the Lord. In this way, one becomes attached to a particular mellow in the Lord's service, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya or Madhura. As a result of such attachment, Bhav develops. Bhav Bhakti is the platform of purified goodness. By such purified goodness, one's heart melts in devotional service. Bhava Bhakti is the first seed of love of Godhead. This emotional stage is there before one attains pure love. When that emotional stage intensifies, it is called Prema Bhakti or transcendental love of Godhead. This gradual process is also described in the following two verses, which are found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.4.15 and 15 and 16 verses. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. Before we begin, I want to acknowledge that speaking at New Raman Reti is a deeply purifying experience just because of the exalted presence of the devotees in the community, in the classroom. And so I feel extremely humbled sitting here. What to speak of speaking on Chaitanya Charitamrita and what to speak of speaking on exalted topics such as Bhava and Prema, which are far beyond my qualification. These are matter for great souls.
and not for someone like me who's still struggling with basic anarthas of life. Yet I take courage and an example from the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and other Vaishnava Acharyas, who repeat multiple times that we speak from not from our own realization, but by the mercy of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So I offer this class with complete dependence on their mercy. My tongue is not completely within my control. Therefore, I pray to the Lordships that may the potency that would be in the words is coming from them, recognition that it comes from them. If there's any value, it is from the words of Acharyas. Any mistakes, misunderstandings are mine alone. And with this mood, let's explore this topic. I'll attempt to explore this topic. And I'm doing it more than anything for my own purification here. So there's quite a lot of context here. Can anyone tell me who's speaking these verses? What's the context? This is Madhya Leela, chapter 23rd. Does anyone know in Chaitanya Charitamrita canon who's speaking these verses? Can anyone take a guess? Lord Chaitanya. To Sanatana Goswami, exactly. Yeah, so this is a conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya is going through different aspects of bhakti, and then he comes to this point, and he's talking about the principle of bhava. And I was thinking in my own life that how do I even approach this topic and how do I go about it? And as through my reflection, one idea came up to me. And I was thinking that sometimes there in life, and you may also feel this way, that we do the right things in bhakti. There we are following the four regulative principles, we are chanting our rounds, we are attending morning programs and programs at the temple, we are doing our service. And from the outside it looks like, oh, such a wonderful devotee, great things are happening. But inside there's a feeling of this gap that, oh, I don't feel that love. Do I really have love for Krishna? Is my chanting really coming out of my mood to chant, or is it mechanical? Am I doing my devotional service out of duty and not desire? And then the question comes, and this is all anything and everything that I'm going to talk about this class is my own experience here. So when does this become real? When does bhakti actually feel like love? When does it make sense that, okay, this is the path of bhakti? And I was realizing that it's not that we are not doing enough in devotional service, because we are following the rules and regulations that Srila Prabhupada very clearly laid out for us. And yet I was thinking that maybe the problem, perhaps the problem is that I don't even know what's blocking me. We don't know what's blocking us. Perhaps there are defending patterns in our life that we don't even see. Perhaps there are anarthas that we are protecting that we have not even identified. Sometimes Prabhupada used to say that the four regulative principles are the standards of purity, but they only separate a human from an animal. Prabhupada used to give that example multiple times. But then what's the real work? Because if the four regulative principles are the foundation, then where do I go up? What are the other anarthas that are present in my life? And so I was thinking of what's the real work? What is that work that takes us beyond these steps of anartha nivritti into bhava, into prema, nishtha, ruchi, all the steps that come in? And I came up with this concept last month. I was in San Diego. We were doing this youth retreat for the youth part of the TSI, Sangha Initiative on the West Coast in San Diego Temple. And we had His Grace Shyam Gopal Prabhu visiting from the manor. And when we were discussing this idea of what is our anartha profile, if I were to document my own list of anarthas, and not just simple but subtle ones, the anarthas of superiority, the anarthas of ego, the anarthas of survival strategy, then how can I surface it and how can I let Krishna chisel it away? So that's going to be the main topic of the conversation today. I'm going to do a quick check on time, okay? And my thesis for today, for this class, is that just as Michelangelo revealed David by chiseling away marble, Krishna reveals the love that is already dormant within our hearts by chiseling away our anarthas. Are we willing to receive the hammer of the chisel and go through that discomfort that takes us on the other side? and go through our unconscious survival strategy, ego fixation, subtle attachments that block the already dormant prema within our hearts. And so perhaps the question becomes, the question is not about how do I get love of Godhead. The question is, what is preventing me from experiencing it? What is preventing me from experiencing it? So that's the thesis, the core statement around which I've structured this whole class. Okay, so one of the first things that stood out to me in these verses is the idea of fortune. This idea that when one develops great fortune, in verse 9, Lord Chaitanya is sharing that by good fortune, a living entity develops faith in Krishna. So I was reflecting that what does it mean? He says, kona bhagya, kona jivera. Bhagya means fortune. So what is this fortune? What, is it grace? How do I understand this idea of fortune? The biography of His Holiness Gaur Govinda Maharaj is titled, When Good Fortune Arises. That when does this good fortune arises? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explains that there are kind of three kinds of fortunes. He says that one is bhoganmukhi sukriti, right? He says that this is fortune that's coming from ordinary pious acts. So doing charity, helping others, good karma. And the result of it is that I get a better body, I get more wealth, a comfortable position. And the problem he highlights is that it still bounces to material existence in life. So fortune leading to material enjoyment, bhoganmukhi sukriti. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about mokshan mukhi sukriti, which means that fortune that leads me to liberation. So he says that philosophical study, meditation, yoga, devoid of bhakti, what it does is it results into freedom from material suffering, conquering the mind, and yet it still doesn't result in a relationship with Krishna. And so yogis and jnanis who are seeking to become one, and yet they are only escaping from the real mellows of relationship that comes. So that's the second kind of fortune that he says, which is fortune leading to liberation. And then finally, he talks about the ultimate fortune, which is bhakti unmukhi sukriti, which means that fortune that leads to devotion. So this is what this verse is talking about, that this kind of fortune, this is what the title of Gaur Govinda Maharaj's biography is, that when good fortune arises, we meet sadhus, we meet devotees, we meet people in jivas, in that kind of association, which uplifts us. I was thinking that good association, what does it mean? A good association should not only feel that, oh, I just feel so satisfied here. It should also feel uncomfortable. It should feel deeply uncomfortable in our hearts. When we see somebody who's at such an exalted position, it becomes a mirror for us. It becomes a mirror for myself that, wow, this is what I aspire to be. We see devotees like, you know, acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, examples of their lives. In our lives also, we may have our mentors and our peers also, or sometimes even people younger than us, that we see that advancement is not dependent on their age or this lifetime, what they have accomplished over years. And that kind of association should make us uncomfortable. And that becomes the quality of good association, where I see something twisting and turning in my own heart, that these are my anarthas, and how do I deal with it? That kind of association, I was realizing, is that's the bhagya, that's the good fortune that arises. And from that, everything else flows. Srila Prabhupada used to hammer this point about association, sadhu sangha, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about it. So what does it mean to be in association? What does it mean to be in association? I used to wonder in the past that maybe association just means just hanging out with the devotees, that's association. But we are not doing any devotional activities, just watching TV, watching whatever, and oh, that's association. Then I realized that, but that's not nourishing for me. Then it became engaging in Krishna Katha. And at some point I realized that even engagement in Krishna Katha became a way for me to avoid the deep, dark anarthas that were existing in the heart. So that became, some writers talk about it as a spiritual bypass mechanism, that I'm just bypassing what's happening in the heart and just directly jumping. And it's the same principle that we bypass the process of anartha nivritti to go up to nishtha, ruchi, bhava, and prema. So what does it mean to sit in an association and feel the desires coming in our hearts, the ego, the superiority, and to sit with it? And so that's really fortune. So the real fortune is to be able to get an association where we can see a mirror, where we feel the discomfort. That's good association, because that allows us to chisel away what's not us, just like Michelangelo carving David. And he's chiseling away, and with each chisel, with each hit, it's burning, it's hot, it's hard. And yet suddenly, years later, the David appears out of a block of marble. So how are we doing the chiseling process in the block of our own life and our own devotional service? That's a question for us to remember and a question for us to ask. Okay. So continuing in that, the idea of Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti, right? Bhakti Unmukhi, this great fortune. Bhakti Vinod Thakur further goes and gives the example that Sukriti could be Agyata Sukriti also, right? It could be hidden accumulation also. I remember from my own life, many years ago, I was just going through a temple, and after the Sunday program ended, and I was about to leave, and somebody invited me from the kitchen that, hey, come here, I want to show you something. And I was like, okay, let me go inside. And there was a huge pile of pots after a program. And what he wanted to show me was my place where I would do the dishes. And it became, and I was so resistant to this whole idea that I don't come here for this. I'm studying, I work, I have a great job, people respect me, and I'm here doing dishes on a Sunday night. And I remember reflecting in that moment, just feeling the disgust of my own ego being shattered in that way, that what if someone sees me, that I'm just doing the pots here, this is what I come to do. And now reflecting years later on that point, that was Agyat Sukriti. That was some devotee bestowing his mercy, even maybe without his realization, maybe he was just looking for help at that point. And yet in hindsight, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if just like you deposit in the bank, and he uses the old Indian currency of 4 anna, 2 anna, and in this way, one day, 1 anna is like 1 cent. One day it becomes $100, and I have no realization of when that happens. So that's how the Sukriti, the good fortune, accumulates. And one day with that $100, I become qualified to associate with people who can make me more uncomfortable and get out of my ego patterns. So, So anyway, this whole series of verses are essentially the stages of bhakti that are mentioned here. And Prabhupada highlights the very next verse is the verse from Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, about Ado Shraddha Tatha Sadhu Sangha. And I was thinking of the whole process of bhakti that is highlighted in these verses by Lord Chaitanya, then quoted by Rupa Goswami, then quoted by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, written in this way. And the word that I found really interesting was Tataha. It starts with Ado Shraddha Tataha Sadhu Sangha, Tatha Bhajan Kriya, Tatha Anartha Nivritti. What does this Tatha mean? What does this Tatha mean that keeps coming up between these stages? And the literal meaning of that word is thereafter, something that happens repeatedly. So it's a sequential, progressive approach. So I was comparing that, how would I see these 9 stages of bhakti in my own life? And I want to carry through this example of, let's say if somebody decides that I want to build some muscle, I want to lose some weight. And if that's the idea, and we do it parallel as the idea of how bhakti starts, it starts with this idea that I want to lose some weight. So it starts with Athato Brahma Jigyas on the process of bhakti, that I want, that there is something more to life. Something is not right in my life right now. And from that stage we come, so that's the preliminary stage before even Shraddha comes into picture, before even faith comes into picture. It's not blind belief or sentimentality. It's the idea that maybe there is a path that works that I can follow. So this makes sense. Maybe this could work for me. So in fitness, I want to transform my physical body. I want to transform. And so that's the state of Shraddha. Then from that Shraddha, what does a builder do? What does somebody? They hire a personal trainer, that I want to work with these people. I want to be in that association. And similarly, in principles of bhakti, we start with associating and identifying the right kinds of association, actually. Because bhakti is also a seed. And in the wrong soil, in the wrong environment, the seed dies. So we identify that these are the people who are serious about physical transformation. So I want to associate and engage with these people. So similarly, in path of bhakti, identifying and choosing our association wisely. Who are we spending time with? Are they reinforcing my own material patterns, or are they really showing me the mirror or challenging my own patterns? Because that's real association for me. Similarly, when I go and work out with some people who are already there, then it should feel that, wow, I am not even disciplined enough to be in that path. That's the association I want to be in. And once that is established, then comes Bhajana Kriya, of course. The practice of, I start my own workout, I start my own practice. I understand, I read Prabhupada's books that, okay, these are the regulative principles. This is the process of initiation. This is Shravan and Kirtan. And this is where casual interest becomes a formal practice. And I was realizing that sometimes, why do I struggle with the idea of Bhajana Kriya, with chanting regularly? Why is it always a struggle? Why there are very few days that I can count where I really want to chant. The other days, oh, I have to chant today, I still have rounds remaining by the evening. And why does that happen? And I was realizing that because Shraddha is not strong. Because my own Shraddha, my own faith is not very strong. And I keep going back. So any struggle on the path of Bhajana Kriya could also be anarthas, but it's also because of weak Shraddha in the first place. Am I absolutely convinced that Krishna consciousness and the process of bhakti is the path for me? Or am I just casually dabbling into it just because I'm around devotees, or I was born in the movement, or I have friends who do it, or I don't have anything else to do? Or am I absolutely convinced that this is the path? This is what I live for. This is what I'm meant to do. This is what Prabhupada told me to do. This is what the acharyas have been telling me. This is what Krishna is telling Arjuna. Do I have that firm conviction in place? So that's why it keeps going back. So it keeps going back to the idea of enhancing our Shraddha. Now, coming back to the practice that I start working out regularly, I'm doing my practice. Then comes the stage of anartha nivritti, removal of unwanted things. So in terms of our bodybuilding example, soreness hits, resistance, wanting to quit. This is too heavy for me. I don't want to go to the gym in the morning. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be disciplined and sleep and get 8 hours of sleep. Similarly, in the principle of bhakti, am I really wanting to let go of all the things that are blocking me? What are my attachments? What are my attachments here? So I'm going to get into the core aspect of these anarthas, that what is my anartha profile? What's really happening for me? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Pad in Madhurya Kadambini gives 4 examples of anarthas, that there are 4 types of anarthas, right? There are anarthas from our past activities, again, rag, avidya, abhinivesha, that are anarthas that are arising from our past activities. And he says that these are removed very early in the process. Up until we get to the point of nishtha, these anarthas are removed. So these are called dushkritottha anarthas. Then he talks about sukritottha anarthas, which are arising from our past piety. So good prosperity, or we did some good activities in the past, reputation, comfortable position. Then these arise from past piety. They are tricky because they could seem a little spiritual or subtle in nature. That it's recognition for my own service, that are people recognizing, for instance, is everyone noticing that how I've prepared this class, how are they seeing me? That's the subtle level of anartha. Is anyone giving me claps for my service that I'm doing? Are they recognizing that, such a great job? That's the sukritottha anarthas. Then he talks about apradottha anarthas, which are the offenses. So offenses to the Vaishnavas, to the holy name. They are dangerous because they block Krishna's mercy directly. And then finally, the anarthas, that weed that grows along the path of bhakti. Again, very similar to the material piety, that people are looking up to me. I'm mentoring all these people. How does that feel for me? My devotional life is respected by people. I'm known as a good devotee in the community. They can be the most dangerous because we may not even see them as obstacles. And so, what does it mean to create my own anartha profile? What does it mean? I want to share my own, some of the anarthas, not just at the gross level, but at the subtle level. I've noticed the anartha of wanting to be the smart one in the room. That, and this has been my whole life, being recognized for my own intelligence going up in school and in college and university, that, yeah, I know more than them. How does it feel for you when someone says that, when somebody teaches something that you already know, when somebody's telling you the words? Do we soften with gratitude or do we subtly resist it? I know this. I am the knower here. This kind of anartha makes the hard heart. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Lord Chaitanya is talking about the melting of the heart. And this does the opposite of it. This hardens the heart. It's like an armor and we are hiding behind the armor. the anartha of being right. I will argue for a point even when I'm not completely sure, just to avoid being wrong. I replay conversations over and over until I have won in my own mind that this is how I should have responded. It blocks the further paths of devotional service because it requires surrender, and I'm unwilling to surrender. When Krishna says sarva dharman parityajya, it also means to surrender the attachment of being right. I am right about this. What about we have a little voice? What if I know better than this? How then, the question for everyone here, for me included, how do we quickly defend ourselves when we are challenged? The speed is the measure of our attachment to being right. How attached are we? It's not about being right. It's the attachment to being right. That's the problem here. We could be right. We follow the acharyas. We follow the principles. But are we really attached to being seen as, oh, this person is right? What about the anartha of looking good? That I curate how others see me. So they see me in spiritual context. They see my victories. They see, but I hide away all my struggles. I manage my image. I curate my image so people see me a certain way. What am I afraid of people finding about me? What if they find out I'm not advanced as I seem? Or what if they find out that, oh, as I'm aging, I actually have more doubts, that my practice is inconsistent? Because looking good is the opposite of authenticity. And bhakti requires authenticity and vulnerability. When our acharyas write vulnerably, humbly, when the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, there's no performance there. They are not writing that, oh, I'm a worm in stool because people would appreciate look how humble I'm looking. No, it's genuine emotion. It requires authenticity. What would happen if everyone here sees our actual spiritual life, not the curated version? That fear is the measure of how we look good. That's the looking good anartha. What about the anartha of pretending not to know? Where am I playing dumb and about my own patterns? What am I pretending not to know about my spiritual and material life? I don't know why I got angry at that person. Perhaps I do. Perhaps it threatened my image. Perhaps it threatened my own insecurity. I don't know why I avoid doing this. Self-deception is the opposite of self-awareness. And getting to the further stages of nishtha, ruchi, requires a ruthless self-honesty. Ruthless self-honesty. Am I willing to look actually what's happening for me? Am I willing to look at it? The question for all of us here is, what are we pretending not to know about ourselves right now? What am I avoiding? What do I not want to see? Oh, that I don't treat people well, that my relationships, I'm always wanting to prove myself right. So these are just some examples from my own life, and recognizing that when we talk about anartha, or when I talk about anartha, it's not just the four regulative principles that, oh, I don't eat meat, I don't, you know, intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. But then what about these subtle anarthas, these weeds? Lord Chaitanya talks about pulling the weeds from the heart. What about these weeds that are growing? Am I doing something to pull these weeds out? Or I'm letting them grow, that as I'm progressing in Krishna consciousness, my ego is also rising up, that people cannot associate with me, connect with me, that I'm suddenly feeling this righteousness whenever I walk into a space that I know better than them. What does this kid know? What do they know? Or am I using different identities as an example to shield the armor, where the path of bhakti requires ruthless self-honesty, ruthless authenticity, and clearing it up, and humbly? Or am I creating my own blockers in the path of surrendering to Krishna? These are the moments. These are the ways we should reflect on it. I should reflect on it. That how do I react when someone corrects me? Or when someone knows something that I don't? Am I arguing just to win? Or genuinely seeking truth through the conversation here? Can I admit when I'm wrong? Or do I just subtly shift the argument to save my face? What am I hiding? Yeah. So these are some ways where we can come up with our own anartha profile. We can write down through this self-reflection that, what is my anartha? We talk about the idea of journaling, that how journaling is a very important concept. And sometimes like, oh, it's too woo-woo, too new agey. But we think of the way we receive Chaitanya Charitamrita is because of journals of Murari Gupta, Murari Gupta actively journaled every day about his life, about what he's learning from Lord Chaitanya. The Kadachas, the diaries of Swarup Damodar Goswami, active journaling and active reflection of what's happening in my life right now. So, and how is Lord Chaitanya's mercy coming to me? So it's part of our tradition. Prabhupada's writings, they came from his own writing and then he shared it with the whole world. The idea of writing and the idea of journaling and the idea of self-honesty is very much part of our tradition. Are we willing to do that? Or are we willing to conveniently avoid it just so that I can put up my show or not even recognizing, the worst part is not even recognizing that I'm putting up a show. And that others can see it sometimes. And when someone sees it, they call it out, and I don't want to see that person. Why? Because it hurts my ego. Yeah, do I have an ego also? I don't even have an ego. So this idea of superiority, the idea of attachment to being right, the idea of looking good, the idea of pretending not to know, we can go on and on about different ways our ego engages in different strategies to keep us in the world. The attachment to be needed, that others need me, look, they need me. But is it my attachment or is it actual need? So these are some questions that we can ask and understand. Make anartha nivritti process a little real for us. That's why acharyas say that it's sometimes a long process. Why? Because it keeps on coming. And actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that anarthas, they don't even disappear actually. Even in nishtha stage, anarthas are there. Vishwanath Chakravarti, so nishtha, when we come to the stage of nishtha, going back to our example of gymming, that means that now I have developed some consistency in my routine and I'm working out and the roots of my bhakti is deepening, the plants can withstand some storms. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that only the anarthas from past sins are eradicated, not others at this point, even at the point of nishtha. Then comes ruchi, right? So the seed now, the leaves are appearing on the seed. I'm enjoying the process of working out and burn and the endorphins and the process. Before ruchi, I'm practicing because of faith and duty. After ruchi, I'm practicing because I want to. It's like a baby tasting solid food for the first time. The anarthas are still there at this point. It's not like they're completely eradicated. Now, then comes the point of asakti, where the flowering begins on the seed. And I can't imagine not going to the gym or not working out. It's who I am right now. I'm connecting with my own identity at this point in time. Prabhupada writes that when attachment develops, the devotee cannot remain a moment without engaging in devotional service. Avyartha kalatvam, that they don't even waste a single moment. And then comes the stage of bhava, where at that point I identify myself as an athlete, as an athletic person. The fruit is forming on the tree from the flowers at this point in time. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the eradication of anarthas is almost complete. It's not complete yet. It's almost complete even at the stage of bhava, because some subtle anarthas still remain. And that's why bhava needs to intensify. The word Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami uses here is gadha. Gadha means something that becomes solid, something that crystallizes. So that bhava, which is like a floating, molten love, needs to solidify and become solid. And at that point, the anarthas fully disappear when it becomes prema. Then I'm an elite athlete. I'm living the transformed life and I'm teaching others. And my fruit is ripened and the fruit, and I'm distributing the fruit to others. That's what this verse described as Sarvananda Dhamma, the reservoir of all pleasure. And this eradication is complete at the point of prema. And that's why when we think of the example that were given, like Prahlada, the example of Uddhava, the example of Bhishma, that when it comes to that stage, that the gopis, the highest example, that we live and breathe Krishna, and the anarthas are eradicated. Up until that point, we need to recognize, what are my anarthas? Where are my anarthas? And with each chisel that's coming my way, am I accepting that chisel as the discomfort of the path of the growth? Or am I seeing that as this is a conflict, I'm resistant to it. I just think that four regulative principles are purity, that's what I'm doing, and I'm not looking at everything else that's happening in my life. So we come to a conclusion of this class so that I can take some questions. So very quickly, we talked in this class, I'm going to go into a quick summary. Just one second. So bhakti is the bhakti unmukhi sukriti, right? There are three kinds of sukriti, three kinds of fortune. The fortune arises in our life and it results into good association. This good association should make us uncomfortable. These are the people who have transcended these subtle survival strategies in life and who see us and who allow us to break these patterns. Now, bhakti unmukhi sukriti is the main one that leads to this. Now, grace, Krishna's grace creates receptivity, not entitlement in our lives, right? Sadhu Sangha is the genuine association that we need. The process is sequential, tatho, one after the other. Anartha Nivritti is not an instant process. It's progressive and it will continue up until we even come to the point of bhava. Anartha Nivritti is an active process of weeding out what's happening in our life. Four types of anarthas exist: from past sins, from past piety, from offenses, and from during the process of bhakti itself, the superiority and the ego attachments that can come. My anartha profile is my own unique obstacle pattern. My profile includes right now superiority, being right, looking good, pretending not to know, hiding. What's included in all of everyone else's anartha profile? Can we do some real reflection? The idea of journaling is from our acharyas. It's practiced. And then the marble to sculpture analogy of how the chiseling away of what's happening. And that we need to come to the point of garha, which means that it becomes intensified. It's like the process of salt. Once you get salt water, there is salt in it, but it's mixed with impurities. We burn it. So the fire of bhakti, the process of bhakti burns these anarthas as we're doing, as we are actively working through that process. And what happens towards the end is that the salt starts to crystallize in its pure form. That's the analogy that comes to my mind of this process of bhakti. And chiseling is the path. The question is not how do I get prema. The question is what anarthas am I avoiding that are blocking the prema that already exists me in my heart as a devotee. And the chiseling is the path. It reveals our true form. Thank you very much. I can take some questions now. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.
When we have to face these things, how do we face them? Like, do I feel disgusted with myself? Do I try to have compassion? Do I, you know, like that?
Thank you for asking. Carl Jung once said that until we make the unconscious conscious, it will govern our life and we'll call it fate. I don't know who said it, but they said that before becoming Krishna conscious, we need to become conscious. So the idea of the first point is recognition. And we see from the Bhagavad Gita itself, what is the first lesson of the Bhagavad Gita? What's the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita? Say that again. You're not this body. Did someone say something in the back? The first lesson of Bhagavad Gita is feel your feelings. The first lesson of Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna being conscious of what's happening for him in that moment. Krishna, I cannot stand on the battlefield. My mind is reeling. Arjuna talks about his three levels of intelligence. He's talking about what's happening at the physical level. My bow is slipping from my hand. I have perspiration. Then he talks about intellectual level, that my mind is going at the mental level. These thoughts are coming that, oh, Varnashankar will come into the population. This is a sin, Krishna. How can we fight? Oh my God, the family tradition would be destroyed. Oh my God, I cannot face them. They are worshipable by me. They are my gurus. So he's talking about what's happening at his physical level, what's happening at the mental level, and what's happening at the emotional level. Krishna, I cannot find. I only see sadness in this. I'm dejected. And he sits down with his head hung. So what's the process, you ask? The first is to recognize what's happening. Am I conscious of my own body? Am I even aware of what my body is telling me? Am I aware of what my mind is telling me? Am I aware of what my emotions are telling me? That's the first step, the idea of being conscious of my own self. Because when I'm conscious of all these areas, then I can understand that, oh, this is the blocker in my life. That's why we need mirrors in our life. We need to constantly be reflected so that I'm not living some fantasy that's being dictated that this is what Krishna consciousness looks like and I'm going to follow. Versus, can I be real? Can I look in the mirror and say that, wow? That's why we need mentors. Rupa Goswami talks about Goyam Akhyati Prichyati in Upadesha Amrit, that we need these mentors, these people in our life that can truly and honestly tell us as it is. These things may not need to be shared in public settings or not everyone, yet finding out who are these people, who I can form these close bonds in life, where I can share that this is what's happening in my life. This is what's bringing shame for me. Can I even label my own emotions? A lot of us, I was very disconnected from my emotions. What to speak of my own? I had no vocabulary for emotions in my life. That how do I even communicate that this is sadness or this is anger? Do I even know the spectrum of human emotions that exist? These same human emotions are ultimately, we offer it to Krishna. But even when we see Damodar Ashtakam, you know, Satyavrat Muni's prayers, I'm like a dead man, I'm falling. There are so many emotions in the writings of our acharyas in Bhakti Vinod Thakur. What to speak of understanding them? First, we understand with our own material emotions. It's understanding our own process of where I exist. So the first step is recognition. That how can I create these ways of recognition? Journaling is a way, actively reflecting and writing, being in good association, which makes us uncomfortable, is a way. What else? There are other ways of reading, of understanding lives of others, really listening to ourselves. Contemplation, that's why it's called Swadhyay. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about it. Swadhyay means the study of the self. Now, it does not mean the philosophical Jiva Tattva from second chapter of the Gita. It also means that how is myself non-self at this point? How am I hiding in my attachments of body? What identities am I playing out in my life? What are my attachments to these identities and to these relationships in my life? It takes this level of self-reflection to really form a profile that, wow, this is what's happening. This is what I need to cross. If I create my whole progress in bhakti as a chart, and I see this mountain of anarthas, and if I can really pinpoint, these are my anarthas. This is how I want to be seen by the world. So the first step, as Arjuna goes through, is recognition. Then communicating. Arjuna communicates this to Krishna, his mentor, his guru. And then Krishna finally engages and understands Arjuna, and then he goes into the process. Right? And Sarva Dharman Parityajya, the idea of surrender, is not in the first chapter of Gita. It's not in the second chapter. It's not in the third chapter. It's in the 18th chapter of the Gita. Sometimes we jump to the idea that, oh, just surrender, everything will be okay. Krishna doesn't do that. Krishna takes Arjuna through the whole process of understanding. And then comes to the point that, okay, now you're ready. So how can I jump to that process of surrender and bhava and prema when anartha or shraddha is still, I'm still struggling at the level of shraddha. So it takes ruthless self-honesty and self-reflection. And it's something that only we can do. People can be mirrors, people can be guides. It requires active effort on my own part, on a daily basis. And that's the path of humility. Humility before... humiliation comes before humility, and that's the idea. That can I humiliate myself on a daily basis by seeing? Otherwise, the world will humiliate me. The lessons will come. Devamrita Maharaj says that this world is like a cosmic, what does he say? Cosmic sensitivity training ground. The lessons are coming. Gaur Govind Maharaj used to say that this is a school of crying. I've opened a school of crying, and I'll teach you how to cry. And if you can't cry for Krishna, cry for your own situation. And if you can't cry for that, cry that you cannot cry. So the process is that the lessons are keep coming. Am I really seeing the lessons in my life? Because once I see the lesson, I graduate to the next lesson, to the next lesson, and to the next lesson. And it goes until the stage of bhava is crossed. The lessons will keep coming because anarthas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, will exist up until that point in time. So hopefully that's the start of awareness is the first principle. Thank you.
Hari Bol Prabhu. Nice. The fruit of our sadhana, our bhakti, is manifested by our willingness to cooperate with the guru, cooperate with the devotees, to spread the preaching. Our willingness, you know, whenever. Like, for example, today we have Harinam at the football stadium. Then devotees should be willing, you know. I mean, like, they're old and sickly, and so that's excuse, you know what I mean? But for the younger devotees, stronger.
You Could know? You keep the microphone closer?
Yeah, and yeah. Then, you know, you have the time. You come out, you know, you engage. So the fruit of our bhakti and our devotion is our willingness to cooperate with Prabhupada's move and help to spread. See? How we can do that, really. Young, old, whatever, really, you know. But That's how it's manifested, and that's how we assess and judge one. See?
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, the idea of cooperation is very important because it's a recognition of when I'm in a setting with people, and if something is coming up for me that, oh, this person is like that, the question to ask is what is it reflecting in my own heart? Because the idea of cooperation comes from that principle that people are only bringing out what I'm not seeing in me. When I see somebody, I feel sudden anger. Why did I get angry? It's not that you make me angry. Why did I make myself angry in your presence? Because it's my emotion. Nobody can take responsibility for what I'm feeling. So when it comes to cooperation, it requires even more of this level of self-understanding. That can I really understand myself? And can I then engage with people? I don't know where I've read it, that either we get association or we give association. So the point is that until we come to that point of self-reflection, that we give association, we start to get association, and we get affected. So do I have that level of self-awareness? And can I allow others to create that level of self-awareness to really pinpoint what's truly right and come to... So the idea of cooperation is very important and can be very challenging also, because the egos get in between that, I don't want to cooperate, I will do my own thing. Well, Prabhupada said that the love for me would be displayed by how you cooperate after my passing. So am I willing to face my ego lessons? I think that's at the core of it. So thank you for bringing this point. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We are able to see more for ourselves and for others. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for a very nice class. Regarding journaling, I was just wondering how, what would you recommend would be the best approach so that we can benefit spiritually from journaling?
Well, couple of thoughts come to my mind. My wife can speak much better to it, who's sitting here. There is an author called Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way. She talks about morning pages, the idea of waking up in the morning, doing our duties, and finding a time where we can just write thoughts that are coming for us, unfiltered, clearing up our mind. So opening up, even before japa, I feel like for me, the days I do it before japa, it's really helpful, because sometimes the thoughts are blockers in japa, right? I'm chanting and something is coming. So if I can just write whatever is coming from me right before I begin my practice of chanting, then a lot of it is already cleared and in front of me. So that's one way, is to wake up in the morning, find your time, and then just without lifting your pen from the paper, you can write 2 to 3 pages. That's one way of creating that habit of journaling. Yes. Yeah. Letters to Krishna. Yeah. Letters to Krishna on a regular basis, that, my Lord, this is happening. The other way is there are guided prompts that we can use now with AI being available very easily. You can ask ChatGPT to give me 30 journaling prompts based on the Bhagavad Gita or based on the first chapter of the Gita, whatever I'm reading. And then it automatically would come up and we can start thinking. The other way is if I read something every day, what is that churning in me? And then utilizing that to write. The idea is to get to writing, because whatever needs to come out of us will come out of us. How we get there is the process. Sometimes if it's hard, even voice notes, I prefer just writing it. Apple has a new update where you put a voice note and it will automatically transcribe it for you. So you can see the transcription copy in your notes app and just go through that. Okay, these are my thoughts that's coming. You want to go one level better? Transcribe it every day. Put a 4-minute, 3-minute voice note on your phone. The app will transcribe it. At the end of the month, put it into an AI and it will give you the areas you need to work upon, I need to work upon in my life. We have so many of these tools available now that we can utilize. We can either be distracted by it or utilize. My wife is big into the 100-day projects, we create a 100 day of writing, that 100 letters to Krishna. Maybe before now, we have roughly 100 days before the end of this year. I want to write 100 letters to Krishna each day. A letter has to be just a one pager that Krishna, and nobody has to see it. We don't even have to publish it, but we can. 100 letters to Krishna is a way. So it depends on what inspires us. Where are we situated? Are we more tech savvy? Are we more? Maybe I would write when I go into nature, and that becomes my process. Maybe I fix it at a particular point in time. So different ways, whatever is strong enough so that our mind won't trick us, that I don't want to do it today. And that's the process that works. Not at all. You can if you feel inspired. There is a writer called David Allen. He has written a book called Getting Things Done. And he talks about that the key moments for us in our lives is the transition periods. So transitioning from one context to another context, these transition periods are a great way to change context, to set up intention. So I'm here at the temple right now. Then I'll go home. So there's a transition period. So these transition periods are a wonderful way to insert new habits in our lives. So before I go home, this is what I'm going to do. Then after I get into my car, I'm going to do something. So if we can identify our own transition periods in our life and see where we can insert some of these things, would be the easiest way, at least what he recommends. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. Hare Krishna. Vanshakalputarubhyascha, kripasindubhya evacha, patitanam pavanebhya, vaishnavibhya.